I want to speak to the issue of younger men, and as I looked at this passage, it was so significant. I'm going to raise the level of younger all the way to 80. Okay, so if you're under 80, you fit in the younger men slot. Okay, if you're 35 and younger, you really fit into this slot, but it is so applicable to all of us that I loved just meditating on this passage this week. It's been great. I think it's a very tough thing in this day and age for a young man to grow up in a godly manner because there are so many things coming at him. In fact, it's tough for all of us, I think, but for the younger man, there is a lot out there to derail their young heart of faith. And, you know, I can remember that preachers would say when I was kids, "Well, I'm glad I'm not in your generation because your generation is really... it's going to be harder for you to grow up than I did." So I think maybe every generation says that. What do you think? For about 6,000 years they've been saying that. But I do think it's pretty tough because I just heard some figures the other day that 6% of the internet is for education. 94% is pornography. And I haven't been able to verify those facts, but somebody who had looked them up told me that. And I thought, man, that's incredible. What a scary world for our kids to enter. And as I read this, one of the things that really occurred to me is that Paul uses positive motivation to get us to think. Now, he doesn't tell them, don't do this and don't do that, because I think life is about listening to the positives and adding the positives in your life. And I know when I say that, there's going to be somebody thinking, well, Steve, I know the Bible says not to do certain things, and that certainly is true. You're right. God does not want us to do things like, for instance, he says, thou shalt not bear false witness, okay, out of the Ten Commandments. Don't lie, okay? And he tells us those don'ts, but the problem is if we begin to look at the don'ts, it becomes very, very hard to function, because I don't know about you, but I'm only motivated positively. Are many of you like that, where you really like to see more positive? Some of you may love it, boom, boom, and you may feel like, ah, that feels really good. I don't get it. I love the positive. And, you know, I think that concentrating on the negatives is a formula for disaster in our lives, because we cannot take something away in our life and leave that void there because we can't do it. In other words, it's like water runs downhill and you try to stop something in your life and it's easy to fill that right back up unless there's something positive in its place. You know what I'm saying? I mean, let's say, for instance, let's say you're a smoker and you decide you want to quit smoking, okay? Because that's more of an addictive type thing, so that makes sense to us. And so you say, okay, I'm going to quit smoking, so you just stop smoking. What happens? Well, at work, you go around the back to where everybody's smoking, and they light up, and you smell that first puff of a lit cigarette, and you think, oh, man, I wish I hadn't quit smoking this week. I wished I had done it next week so I could just light up here, because you've got a void there, and you have to replace it some. And so a lot of people may suck on sugar-free suckers or memorize verses to quote to themselves or drink a bottle of water rather than smoking, and so they replace that. And I think that's a biblical process that we replace with those things that we leave empty in our lives when we decide not to do certain things. So I want to give you a biblical example. King Nebuchadnezzar ruled in the New Babylon Empire, and in 586 BC, before Christ, his army invaded Judah, and they conquered the land, and they came into Jerusalem, and they conquered, looted, and burned all of Jerusalem, knocked down its walls. They destroyed Solomon's temple, and they took many people captive, and it was according to what God wanted, because Israel had gotten so bad in their sin. And among the prisoners was a young teenage boy whose name is Daniel, and where we get the book of Daniel in the Bible. And soon after Daniel arrives in Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar told his ministers, look, go out among these captives, these Jewish captives, and select some handsome and smart men, And we were going to train them in the culture and the ways of Babylon, and so that they can be used in my service. And so they went out and they chose, and Daniel was one of these young men that they chose. And so right off the bat, Daniel faced a negative problem. The new trainees had to be served the food and wine that was set before the royal family, and Daniel couldn't do that because he was kosher. Okay, now, what I mean by kosher, if you're not familiar with the Jewish ways, there are certain ways they prepare food. There's certain foods you can eat and can't eat, and so when they're prepared correctly, it's called kosher, and Daniel was kosher. He was a lover of God as a teenager. He was unwilling to eat the food and drink the wine. And so Daniel resolved that he would do neither. So he asked the chief steward in charge of him and all the other guys, who had really taken a liking to Daniel, if he could eat vegetables and drink water. And so, of course, the steward was pretty upset, and here's a clear case of, I'm not going to do it, there's a void here, and yet Daniel fills it with something positive. He's going to drink water and eat vegetables. Sorry, the allergies are bad, aren't they? Man, my throat is drying up fast, so I'm going to have to keep swigging a little water here. So Daniel decides to drink water, eat vegetables, instead of eating the food of the king as a replacement. Now, he could have just picked away at the king's food, but what would have happened? He would have started eating all the king's food, and he knew it, and so he went to vegetables and water. So I call that replacement therapy. All right, replacement therapy, because we replace what we don't want in our lives with what we do want in our lives, and we trade it out. And so the chief steward went into a panic, of course, because he knew that the king would take off his head if he ate vegetables and water and started looking gaunt and pale and that kind of thing. And so Daniel persuaded him, said, look, I will do this for 10 days, and if I start looking sickly or whatever, then I will eat the royal food. I don't think he would. I think he probably would have killed himself because he was that determined. But if I look well, then I can keep doing it. And so the steward said, okay, go for it. And so he drank water and ate vegetables. And by 10 days, his cheeks were more rosy. He was more healthy than the others. And he stood out as looking really good. Now, the moral of this story is not, let's become vegetarians. Okay? That's not my goal here. The story is that in order to remain faithful to God and follow God, Daniel replaced what he felt like was sin for what was righteousness. And I think he set out a pattern for you and I to replace something negative with something positive. And I know you've been there in your life. I know you've had those things in your life, like me, that you really don't want in there, but so many times we just decided not to do it, prayed about it, felt good about it, and returned to it because we didn't replace it with something positive. Are you following me here? Okay. So let's look at the scripture. I want to talk about this morning, and I want you to notice how Paul uses positives here rather than negatives to help spur us on. Likewise, verse 6, likewise, and you remember likewise meant for the young women as well, that the older men and the older men, women were to admonish and teach the younger women, and now the younger men, likewise, exhort or encourage the younger men to be sober-minded. Now, if you remember, sober-minded means wise, it means self-control, and every older man, older woman, younger man, God says to use self-control. Okay? Not a very practiced art in our society. We indulge and we, you know, eat the candy, we do all those kind of things. It is hard to practice self-control. And so Paul's saying, use self-control. Think wisely and use self-control. Now, he didn't say, don't think unwisely and don't stop not having self-control. He said, positively, think wise, and have self-control. It'd be pretty motivating, wouldn't it, if Paul said in this list, don't. I don't know. I it would discourage me because I think I already know don't. I want to do. You know what I'm saying? And so instead, he admonishes the older and women to encourage them to do something positive, to be wise, and to exercise self-control. And then Paul switches and talks directly to the younger men. 7. In all things concerning yourself, in all areas, is what it means. In all things, showing or presenting yourself a pattern, an example of good works. Now, I'm talking to you men here, especially this morning. A pattern of good works. Men, we have talked on occasion, and recently we've talked about it. I did a series a while back on how much men are occupational. How much men are built to be occupied with something. And the problem is, men, it's very easy to be occupied with sin as well as work and other things in our lives. And we talked about how women are relational. Their desire is to their husband and their children. You remember out of Genesis 3:16, we talked about it last week. But man's desire is to work and to be occupied with something and with anything. And we have to be careful, men, because we can be occupied with sin. Now, let me read the what people call the curse. I think it's the pronouncement in Genesis 3:17. Cursed is the ground for what? For your sake. Men, this is for our sake. I don't get it. I just believe it. You know what I'm saying? I look at it and I think, man, I don't want to work. I don't want to sweat. And then I meet men who come to me who are out of a job. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they're going on life. They lose all. It's amazing. You ladies know when your husband is out of a job, they almost don't know who they are, right? They just get kind of listless, and they need to be kind of pushed. And a lot of them come to me so I can push them because their wives are tired of it. Because you just kind of, with men, if you aren't working and you aren't occupied, you kind of don't know who you are. And I know that sounds funny, but ask anybody here that's been out of a job. You begin to doubt yourself because we have been God has cursed the ground for our sake, and He wants us to be occupied work. So it says, "In toil, you shall eat of it." In other words, we plod along and we toil all the days of your life, both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field, and the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and dust you shall return. So God's gift to us, men, I almost would call it a gift, is that we plod through our work all the way to the end, and then we drop dead. Isn't that a great gift? Man, that sounds great. And I remember that in Psychology Today, I read this little snippet in there that brought it up before, that said that the first two reasons for women leaving the workforce at 40, number one is the job gets too hard. The second is that men are too boring. Can you believe that? Men, too boring? We just plod along, and they want to celebrate everything. They want to celebrate birthdays and anniversaries and Bronco days and that kind of thing. And men, do you care much? Come on, be honest. Who could care less about celebration? Well, that's the way we're built. We just work, and we stay occupied, and we do it. And I feel so bad for you ladies, because you're continually trying to make us, you know, you think there's going to be a surprise and we're going to do great things like on anniversary and that kind of thing. Just doesn't ever happen like you kind of dream, does it? We're not celebrators. In fact, I brought this up before too, but I had a job where I worked with all ladies in office. There's six ladies right in my immediate area, and five of the six were going through menopause. And it was quite an experience for me to learn how to deal with ladies. And every day, it felt like every day to me, that's an exaggeration, but every once in a while I walk in and they go, "Steve," and I go, "What? Where's your Bronco cookies? It's Bronco Day." I think, I didn't know it was Bronco Day. I didn't know we were celebrating. So I'd have to call up my wife. She'd bake some cookies, bring them in, that kind of thing. And then pretty soon, well, it's Kathy's anniversary. Didn't you know that?
And all the way through, for 6 years, I did that, and I'd never get it. And I would have thought in the 6 years that they would get it, that I didn't get it. But they never got it. And so I never brought my cookies. So then I left that job, and I went to Sashco, and it was all men. And 2 or 3 years in there, I thought, you know what? We haven't celebrated one thing yet. Other than they would make an announcement over the loudspeaker. There was cake in the cafeteria, so we'd all run up and get our piece and go back to the factory. You guys know what I'm talking about? Huh? The women! Yeah, that's right. You know, it's just such a funny thing. And, you know, I'm just giving you kind of the overall thing. Some men are a little bit different. Some celebrate more, some celebrate less. But, you know, I thought about this long and hard, and Deb and I used to ride a tandem quite often down into Denver and back up. And in the process, there was a park we'd stop at, and there were quite a few vagrants that would be, you know, like sleeping under the bridge and that kind of thing. And I thought, okay, well, they're not occupational. Those men are not occupational. Only guys that, you know, have to... Oh, no. We'd see them wake up, and when they wake up, they'd stretch, and they'd get up, and they'd get their cart, and they go collect cans and bottles and that kind of thing. They'd work all day, take it down and cash them in, go to the liquor store, buy a bottle, come back, drink it, and fall asleep again. Yeah, they're occupied. I'm telling you, is it not true, men? Are you not that way? Women, if you haven't discovered, this is going to be a great discovery for you today. Because your men are occupational. They are not, now listen to me, ladies, they are not relational. Now, you may have this hidden desire that they're going to get relational, and they'll learn some things from you, but they are not very relational. Amen, men? Yeah. Yeah, 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 let's celebrate that. Somebody put out the cake. All right, so as I was studying, you know, and last week we talked about Genesis 3:16, where it said, "And her desire shall be to her husband, and he will rule over." Do you remember those words? Well, now let's go to Genesis chapter 4, verse 4. And I want to use the same phrase. In fact, I called a friend of mine that's really a good Hebrew scholar, and he said, yeah, it's the exact same words, it's the exact same phrasing, and Moses did that on purpose when he wrote that. And listen to this, what it says. "And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell." He pouted. Okay. "So the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry, and why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted?'" Okay, and I want us to think about this for a minute. Let's put it into our modern day. If we do well with Jesus Christ, if we have a relationship with Him, men, and we're reading and meditating on the Word, and we're choosing self-control and righteousness in our life, don't you feel accepted at that point? And yet, when we sin, we have that sense of unacceptance that we struggle with. And so he said, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door. Sin crouches at the door. And look at this. And its desire is for or towards you. Now, here's the interesting thing. We see this even with Paul. We see it in the modern times that if we don't develop a strong relationship with Christ, if we don't practice self-control, and Paul says it over and over, Peter says it over and over, John says it over and over, that we need to practice that self-control. We need to think wisely, because look at what it says. "And its desire is for you, but you shall rule over it." Exactly what it told the woman, he's telling the man, but it's about sin rather than the husband. Isn't that interesting? And I think it's, you know, my wife and I discussed it all week, and we went round and around and around, and I talked to a few other people, because the women's world is more in terms of relationship and what's going on, but because the man's mind is in occupation, it's much more broader in its sense, and we get tricked more into sin because we don't do well. And so we think, okay, we can kind of ease up here and do a little bit of this and do a little bit of that. And what happens? Sin jumps at us. Isn't that true, man? Sin jumps at us, and all of a sudden we find ourselves in sin, and we think, man, we can't do that anymore. And then we get tricked again. The desire of sin is towards you, men. And if you don't do well, it will capture you. And so we have to rule over it. Maybe in modern language, if we live a half-hearted Christian life, sin's going to control your life. Sin's going to control your life. And so we get to verse 7, and he says, in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works. God's looking for you to do a pattern of good works, to walk the walk and not just talk the talk, men. Because you're occupational, it's important for you to do good works. Not for salvation, we got that covered. But that we walk in those things that God wants us to walk in. And then he says, here's the things he wants us to walk in. In doctrine, which means the teachings. Showing integrity. Oh, that goes back to respect, doesn't it? That we had last week. Showing integrity. Reverence, it means respectable. Being respectable. Incorruptible means having soundness in your life. Having soundness. And then sound speech means healthy speech that cannot be condemned. That one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say to you. And I looked at that, and it's just the same thing that that Paul says in 2 Timothy 2:15, study to show yourself approved, or be diligent to show yourself approved, a workman that does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth, or accurately handling the word of truth. Men, it sounds funny, but we must labor. We must labor towards a solution to the sin problem, and that is replacement therapy, not void. Paul is telling us to look at our choices and keep them wise, exercise self-control, say no to those things that we don't need to do, and say yes to those things that we do. Being respectable, having healthy speech, so that we can't be condemned by others. So I want to close with this thought. In my one-year Bible, I've been reading, and I read past in 1 Chronicles 4, the prayer of Jabez. Now, somebody wrote a whole book on this, and at the time I thought, man, how can you get a whole book out of a sentence? But I want to read this, just this one verse to you about Jabez, and then I want to talk about what I've been thinking about. And Jabez called on the Lord of on the God of Israel, saying, "Oh, that you would bless me indeed and enlarge my territory, that your hand would be with me, and that you would keep me from evil, that I may not cause pain." So God granted him what he requested. And as I read over there, to be honest with you, I didn't care about expanding the territories and prospering and that kind of thing. The phrase that caught me was, "Would you keep me from evil, God?" And we see that same thing in the Lord's Prayer, don't we? "Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil." And in that one, it's the evil one. And I began to pray this last week, and Clyde and I shared together, and we kind of prayed together this whole thing of, "Lord, you know what? I'm tired of spinning my wheels. Lord, can you help us stay out of the evil and stay in the place of righteousness and be able to exercise self-control and be wise in our choices and in our speech? And Lord, it's your desire that all men be saved and come to the knowledge of truth. Can we have a piece of that rather than a piece of sin and a piece of hassle? Lord, can you keep us from walking in evil?" And what a great week it's been. What a great week just praying that prayer. And as I thought about it, I just thought, I don't know how you feel on certain days, but I just felt like it's high time, Lord. Come on, let's get it on. Let's get it on. I'm gonna say no to those things, and I'm going to say yes to your desires. And, you know, it's been fun because it's been easier to share Christ. It's been easier to talk to people about spiritual things. And all the while I'm praying this, I realize sin is crouching at the door. You know what I'm saying? Sin's there. It's waiting. It's waiting for me to get vulnerable because it's going to jump. Its desire is for me, and its desire is for you. And the question is, what do you choose? What will it be for you? Doing the things that God has approved of and told you you can walk in, are you going to hit the neutral and coast and let sin jump and take over your life?